Ooh, here we are. It's another day in paradise, where paradise is kind of a shitty, almost winter weather in the area around Virginia. I don't know. Old man winter's giving us one last crack, but any day above the grass is a good day, if you ask me. Maybe. Okay, so I will guarantee there's going to be more than 30 minutes worth of stuff today, because good Lord, there's so much going on. Let's start with the 10-ton elephant in the room, which is the bridge issue that happened in Baltimore. Number one, hearts go out to the family that was, families that were affected by this and the city of Baltimore. But I've been watching like CNN and all those folks and MSNBC and whatever, and I'm an equal opportunity news hater, so I've watched all of them. It's amazing how many people are not only experts on cyber and economics and whatever, but now somehow they're all friggin' experts on what's going on with ships. So let me give you a little bit more insight into what's the real issue here. So I've watched the video repeatedly and looked at the timeline and whatever else. I was in the Navy and I have done hundreds of import and export things that you do to enter and leave a port. You can see clearly in the video and look at the timeline and understand that basically what occurred here was the ship was going out of the harbor on a slack tide. They didn't have tugs, which I don't really understand why they wouldn't have tugs, but okay, they didn't have tugs, or the tugs were not tied up. You can clearly see that there was a loss of power. You can see that the generator tried to kick on or did kick on or kicked on and failed or whatever. And then they went black again. And because of the fact that they are basically a giant metal tub with tons and tons and tons of stuff floating on them and a slack tide, and they had already built up some momentum, they drifted into the pylons. There's no cyber implication anywhere in that. I would say, argue that there's probably some issues around seamanship there. Additionally, because these are commercial vessels, not military vessels, they don't typically have a rear manual steerage system. And if they do, it's nowhere near as good as the ones you have in the US Navy. So when we were doing this stuff in the Navy, whenever we pulled in or where we were back up on pretty fast. So, that's what happened here. It wasn't a cyber thing. There's no indications or real reality around, China being involved in this, I don't think. But just know that the truth of the matter is that this is a crap, bad seamanship, bad timing, factors that are all tied to it. I could go further down this because I do know a thing or two about the nautical side of this, but what does it matter? The point is, don't listen to any of the news that's talking about cyber implications here, because there's not any. It's just not. Yeah, that's not a thing. Okay, further on, let's talk about CISA's publication that they just released. And so here we go. So CISA releases draft rule for cyber incident reporting. This is in Cyber Scoop. In one of the biggest cybersecurity policy reforms in recent memory, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, whatever you call it, released its much-anticipated notice of proposed rulemaking to require critical infrastructure organizations to report cybersecurity incidents, a move intended to provide the federal government with better insight about breaches that affect highly sensitive entities such as water and power. So there's that. And here's more on that. It's called Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, or NOPR, which is kind of funny. NOPR, nope, represents the next step in a process that began in the rules. Companies would have to report incidents in less than 72 hours. That's comical. After the covered entity reasonably believes the covered cyber incident has occurred. Again, comical. And ransomware payments within 24 hours of being made, unless payment is accompanied by an incident in which the organization has 72 hours. So already it's confusing. Already it's convoluted. I'm reading through the whole stretch of this thing, but oh, sure. While they contain a series which was carried out through. According to the proposed rule, CISA plans to use the data it receives to carry out trend and threat analysis, incident response, and mitigation to inform future strategies. So here's an example. It's 447 pages. I'm going to read the whole thing. Details a dizzying array of nuances for specific sectors and cyber incidents. For example, companies would only be required to report a distributed denial of service attack if it results in a service outage for an extended period. One that results in a brief period of unavailability, however, not need to be reported. So what the fuck is the purpose of this thing? Like, it's already getting mushed down and becoming less valuable and whatever else. So 440 pages. I don't even want to think about how much of our money went into doing this thing, but we'll see. I think it's probably really valid that it's got nope in it, but yeah. So follow that. Additionally, there's this article about the immediate creation of a dedicated U.S. cyber force, which is being pushed. So here's what the thing says. Severely lacking military coordination and recruitment for U.S. cybersecurity efforts have prompted the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, FDD, to urge Congress to immediately advance an independent cyber force. That was a seventh force. So we're going to have not the Pentagon, we're going to have the Heptagon, I think. That would ensure the country's cyber defense readiness. Such a cyber force, which is recommended to be managed by the U.S. Army, should be given $16.5 billion to support nearly 10,000 workers, noted the nonpartisan think tank, which I have that report here as well, which added the proper implementation would not be detrimental to military cyber forces currently working to transition. Instead, cyber forces would gain more operational focus and direction while consolidating acquisitions. So I don't know if any of these people here have ever worked in the military or seen how this stuff goes on, but it's not exactly what you would call a butter smooth transition when there's a whole new force put together. But anyway, so Defense Scoop reports that U.S. Space Force has begun evaluating the viability and design of an additional cyber command component with a new mission analysis team focused on satellites. Okay. No plans have been finalized. We're going to stand up more components implementation. Like other military services, the Space Force must prepare and present forces and personnel to every combatant command. This won't go over like they're thinking that it will. I don't necessarily disagree that we could use a cyber force. I honestly would rather have had a cyber force before we had a Space Force. Because I think it's more of a current problem that we should be dealing with. And there's definitely more clarity in the engagement sort of side of that and well-established rules like Title 18, Title 10, Title 50, those types of things. But hey, whatever, space is sexy and cooler and they get to dress up like they're in Star Trek or something. So just because we talked about the critical infrastructure thing, I wanted to, again, just show you how the nature of how big this problem is. So okay, there's 449 page coming from CISA, a report thing that says you got to report stuff, blah, blah, blah. How hard is it to find vulnerable assets through, I don't know, Shodan, because I do it all the time. So all I did was ran a very simple dork through Shodan. I looked for SCADA-related technology. I used the RDP port, and I looked for things that have no auth or basically are just sitting there opening the internet. So it's SCADA. It's in the U.S., has no auth, and it's remote protocol desktop stuff. I found 700 of those. Within those 700, was able to jump down into it. Literally found one with a login that's just open to the internet in Stockton, California, which I'm not going to go further into it, but it's a Windows 10 OS version. 2004 is when this thing was last updated. So yeah, let's see if there's any more that are just here. Looks like San Antonio's got some issues. Here's another thing that looks like it's probably tied to a water control system. And if I get rid of the U.S., let's just see what goes on global here, just on that same port, whatever. And you can probably hear me clicking away because I'm actually doing some typing and stuff. 82 globally. Here's one in Turkey with, administrator basically opened the internet, and it's Windows Server 2012 R2. here's one in Amsterdam in the Netherlands, with the vulnerability is literally posted on it, says Blue Keep. So problem here. So, I mean, like, all I'm trying to say is that the reality of the issue that we face is, even if we're coming up with additional reporting requirements and blah, 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 and whatever else, if it's not based in what's actually going to make a difference, why are we doing it? Let's change the approach slightly and say, instead of another fucking reporting requirement, why don't we go off and say, we're going to set up a tiger team or a task force within the federal government. Your job is solely to scan the internet for easily findable, vulnerable systems that are tied to SCADA. Let's just stop it right there. And you have the authority by the Department of Justice or something to say, you're going to enforce that there must be changes to the system. If it's that vulnerable, you can reach out and you can say, look, I don't know if it's a warrant or a subpoena or some piece of paper that comes from a judge that says, if you don't do this and fix this within, let's call it 90 days, we will penalize you financially via the tax code. Like, let's put a cyber moron tax and basically push that out against organizations and then watch what happens. You hit people where it hurts and it makes a difference. We don't need $16.2 billion for another cyber force for that. We can do this with, you know, 50 dudes and a bunch of Monster energy drinks and some time at Taco Bell. Dudes being the royal dudes, right? Ladies and gentlemen. But this, like, we're putting so much more money into this stuff and it's not going to make a lick of difference. And it's our tax dollars. So there's got to be a better, smarter way to do this. Maybe I'm the only person that sees this, or maybe if they stand up the cyber force, I tell you what, I'll be if it's not run by the Army, because that would totally ruin my sort of history career thing. I guess I'll volunteer myself to take up a role as like a colonel or something. So just send me my birds and I'll put them on, and then just don't make the uniforms too lame, and you know, we'll be good to go. So, because I'm sure even a medically retired chode like me can do cyber work. As a colonel. I'm just a thought, just saying, I'm offering the help here. So, cause we're wasting a lot of money and a lot of resources on a lot of dumb shit. Okay. Let's talk about Citibank, Ars Technica lawsuit. Citibank refused to reimburse scam victims who lost life savings. And this comes from the New York Attorney General's office, says. So if you're a Citibank customer or do business with Citibank, I would listen. Citibank has illegally refused to reimburse scam victims who lost money due partly to Citibank's poor online security practices, New York AG Letitia James alleged in a lawsuit. The lawsuit alleges that Citi does not implement strong online protections to stop unauthorized account takeovers, misleads account holders about their rights after their accounts are hacked and funds are stolen, and illegally denies reimbursements to victims of fraud. And that's in the press release. So here's some stuff that basically validates this. Defendant Citibank has not deployed sufficiently robust data security measures to protect consumer financial accounts, responded appropriately to red flags, or limit theft by scam, according to the lawsuit. Instead, Citibank has overpromised and underdelivered on security, reacted ineffectively to fraud alerts, misled consumers, and summarily denied their claims. Citi's illegal and deceptive practices have cost New Yorkers and probably more Americans millions and lots more. So here's an example of some of the stuff that they're being blamed for. In an October 2021 incident, a customer clicked on a link in a scammer's message, but did not provide additional information. So they got phished, but they didn't give the rest of the stuff, and then called her local branch for Citibank to report the activity, but was told, quote, not to worry about it. 3 days later, the customer discovered that a scammer changed her banking password, enrolled in online wire transfers, transferred $70,000 from savings to checking, and then electronically executed a $40,000 wire transfer, none of which was consistent with this person's past account activity. So that should have been something that was flagged. For weeks, the customer continued to contact the bank and submit affidavits, but in the end, she was told that her claim for fraud was denied. Citi, no refunds when people follow criminal instructions. Citi defended its security and refund practice in a statement provided to Ars Technica, stating this: Citi Bank closely follows all laws and regulations related to wire transfers and works extremely hard to prevent threats from affecting our clients and to assist them in recovering losses when possible. Banks are not required to make clients whole when those clients follow criminals' instructions, and banks can see no indication the clients are being deceived. So there's your lawyery way of getting out of things. Citi acknowledged that there has been an industry-wide surge in wire fraud during the last several years and said it has taken proactive steps to safeguard our clients' accounts with leading security protocols, intuitive fraud prevention tools, clear insights about the latest scams, and driving client awareness and education. Our actions have reduced client wire fraud losses significantly, and we remain committed to investing in fraud prevention, blah, 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 bullshit. Lawsuit seeks a permanent injunction against Citibank. Woof, an account of customer losses over the last 6 years. Ouch. Payment of restitution and damages to any harm consumers and civil penalties. So good God, I wouldn't want to be Citibank right now. But there you have it. Like, the bank's literally saying, like, if you follow the instructions of a fish, then you're fucked pretty much. And don't come to us and say, you know, here's an issue or whatever, because we're not going to make you whole. Now, what if someone breaks into the bank with a gun and robs it? They're insured for, you know, those losses, and they just get their money back and going about their day. But here they are literally telling you and me, the people who put our money in these banks, that if it happens digitally, tough shit. So explain that to me. How does that work? Further down the rabbit hole of corporate evil, Facebook snooped on user Snapchat traffic and secret project. Oh, shizzle. This is on TechCrunch. So in 2016, Facebook launched a, quote, secret project designed to intercept and decrypt the network traffic between people using Snapchat's apps and its servers. The goal was to understand users' behavior and help Facebook compete with Snapchat. Didn't Facebook acquire Snapchat? According to newly unsealed court documents, Face called this Project Ghostbusters in a reference to Snapchat's ghost-like logo. Oh, isn't that special? On Tuesday, a federal court in California released new documents discovered as part of the class action lawsuit between consumers and Meta, Facebook's parent company. The new documents reveal how Meta tried to gain a competitive advantage over its competitors. That was what a competitive advantage is, but anyway, including Snapchat and later Amazon and YouTube, by analyzing the network traffic of how its users were interacting with Meta's competitors. That's shady as shit. Given these apps' use of encryption, which basically means they had to break it, Facebook needed to develop special technology to, quote, get around it. And I have the documents here from this thing as well. One of the documents details Facebook's Project Ghostbusters. The project was part of the company's in-app action panel, IAPP, program, which used a technique for intercepting and decrypting encrypted traffic from Snapchat users at YouTube and Amazon. The document includes internal Facebook emails discussing the project. Zuckerberg's emails are in here. It's a man-in-the-middle attack. Given, and here's a quote from the report, given that Snapchat encrypted the traffic between the app and its servers, this network analysis technique was not going to be effective, blah, blah. This is why Facebook engineers proposed using a man-in-the-middle sort of attack, which when activated had the advantage of reading all of the device's network traffic before it got encrypted and sent over the internet. So proxy stuffy kind of things. But yeah, so if you want more proof of the evil of Facebook and the human robot automaton that is Zuck, there you go. Like, they do evil shit and they keep getting away with it. I don't know how, like, Congress and those folks should be burning the fucking doors down to this, to go after these people. But don't we? Oh, we have those data privacy laws, and we have all the things that say don't do this because we'll penalize you, and they do it anyway. And what's the loss? Like, so I understand the snark is super high here, but the snark is high for a reason, because this is the type of stuff that should make people upset, but it just kind of falls by the wayside. Let's talk about some of the stuff in the SpyCloud report around the incidents. So fight over digital identities. Let's talk about how bad they are as far as, identities and everything else. So trends from 2023. Average breach size was about 2 million records. 100,000 master passwords from password managers were stolen last year. 74% of users had bad passwords. 74%. There's your phishing training. There's your cybersecurity training. Recaptured passwords, in other words, passwords that were reused and had already been captured once, 1.38 billion. And new types of data that they're after: session cookies, API keys, webhooks, and crypto addresses. So there you go. Proof that it's not making things much better. It just isn't. Hackreed, Nissan confirms data breach affected 100,000 customers and employees. Following a cyber attack in December 2023, Nissan confirms a data leak impacting customers, dealers, and employees. Information potentially compromised includes the same shit that's been stolen 10,000 times over, names, contact, and government IDs, blah, blah, blah. Nissan is contacting infected individuals and offering credit monitoring. Thanks. The breach was linked to a 2023 cyber attack claimed by the Akira ransomware group, exposed PII of folks for information. Mainly this was Australia and New Zealand. So Akira ransomware group claimed to have stolen 128 gigs of information, including corporate files. Other impacted businesses include Mitsubishi, Renault, Skyline, Infiniti, LDV, and Ram. I have a Ram truck, so I guess they got my shit again, because whatever. I don't know. How is Ram tied into this? Maybe it's a dealer thing. I don't know. So if you're a Nissan customer or one of these others, Renault, Skyline, Infiniti, LDV, Ram, or Mitsubishi, get, you know, pay attention to your accounts, because there you go. Let's also talk about the new Pentagon cyber policy post person. This is in C4ISRnet, which is a pretty solid publication about government stuffs. The Army has picked, or excuse me, Biden, President Biden picks Army's Solmeier for this post. Now, President Joe Biden said he will tap Michael Solmeier, U.S. Army Principal Cyber Advisor to the Department of Defense, to be the policy chief, cyber policy chief. Solmeier in the past has served as Senior Director of Cyber Policy at National Security Council, Senior Advisor at Cyber Command. He was Director of Cybersecurity Project at Harvard. But I mean, I guess the question that I always have is, if you go look at this person's like education, let's just do that because you can do this stuff. Doctor, so he's a doctor, and this is from Army Cyber Command. And of course, he's got the cool picture. This is not a knock on the person personally, okay? This is just an analysis of the people that are getting put in charge of things. Maybe this dude's the best, I don't know, policy writer in the history of policy writing. But so, let's see. Dr. Solmeier assumed the position of Principal Cyber Advisor to the Secretary of the Army, Army Chief of Staff in 2022. Prior to that, he was Director of Rapid Vulnerability Review in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. He served as a Special Assistant to the President's Senior Director of Cyber Policy. So he's got lots of cyber in his background. His education looks like Oxford. So over there in England, PhD in politics, Stanford Law, King's College of London, and Stanford University. So cool. I mean, he seems like he's very educated. But I guess for a policy thing, probably makes sense to have somebody that is a lawyer there writing policy. So good. And I did that on the fly because I don't like to poison the well here. Like, I wasn't really sure if this person was what I would, whatever value I provide, considered qualified for this, but I think this cat probably knows his stuff. So congratulations. Office of Public Affairs for the DOJ. Seven hackers associated with Chinese government charged with computer intrusions. Yeah, defendants operated as part of the APT-31 hacking group, which we've all heard about. So I've got the indictment as well. The indictment was unsealed, charging seven nationals of the PRC, People's Republic of China, with conspiracy to commit computer intrusions and wire fraud. That's been going on for 14 years. Mm-hmm. The defendants are, I'm not even going to try and pronounce their names because I'll butcher them, but you can look it up here. I'll put the link in this afterwards. Over 100,000 malicious emails impacting thousands of victims across multiple continents are alleged in today's indictment. Department of Justice will relentlessly pursue, expose, and hold accountable cyber criminals as long as they do it for 14 years, I guess would be the twist on that, and do hundreds of thousands. So the indictment sealed today, together with statements from our foreign partners regarding the related activity, shed further light on the PRC Ministry of State's aggressive cyber espionage and transnational repression activities worldwide. Today's announcements underscore the need to remain vigilant to cybersecurity threats, blah, 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 whatever. The FBI's relentless dedication to combating cyber threats, as long as they do it for more than a decade, should be the caveat there. Yeah. So, I mean, you can read through this. I'll put it in here. But more than 10,000 malicious emails sent. Looks like they went after pretty much everybody and everybody they could get with. They went after U.S. people, foreign politicians, members of their family, Senate, pretty much everybody. They targeted U.S. companies, 5G as well, targeting for transnational repression of dissidents. So all the Chinese sort of things that they do in the Chinese playbook are in here. Yeah. Do it for 14 years and we'll get you. If you wanted a good laugh, Security Week has a publication about vulnerabilities. This shows you the effectiveness of U.S. government policy. So U.S. government urges software makers to eliminate SQL injection vulnerabilities. SQL injection, folks, as a hacking technique, has been around for a long time. And for it to be like, let's do this now, I mean, Jesus Christ. The U.S. and CISA FBI published a Secure by Design alert urging organizations to review their software products to eliminate SQL injection vulnerabilities. I'm not even going to do it because I've done it pretty regularly, but I can tell you SQL stuff is still crazy vulnerable and it's all over the place. And it would be comically easy to go after one of those things. So let's talk about deepfakes for a minute because I want to get you all out of here and do other things. But Bojan Simic, who's the CEO at Hyper, showed me a really cool app called Heygen, H-E-Y-G-E-N. And it's a really interesting application of deepfakes. So I'm not telling you to do this, and I'm not saying or endorsing this thing. I'm just saying this is a thing that could be done. But I went on there, and I've actually started working on putting together some content around translating zero trust lessons into foreign languages. I just finished one in Russian. I don't speak Russian, but I put it together. I ran it, and it's got video of me speaking Russian in pretty good sync. Like, it's really hard to tell that it's not actual stuff. And then I can share this with people. So, you know, if you're looking to do work internationally, might be kind of cool to go off and jump into this and try and tie in some of these technologies into your own go-to-market and whatever, because you don't have to speak the language anymore. I guess part of the question here is, are we seeing the death of the need to learn other languages? Because how soon will it be when you just, you know, say talking to this and it translates? I mean, it's already kind of here, but like you can run an entire training marketing program off of this thing and not speak a lick of it. I started in Russian on this. The next one I'm going to do is probably in Dutch, and then we'll just go from there. But I don't speak any of those languages. I am barely able to speak English. So there's broader implications. Now, the weird thing about this particular software is when you go to record a video, it makes you sign verbally and audibly and video-wise a kind of disclaimer saying, like, you authorize them to create this video content, which I'm sure is hashed and stored somewhere and tied to whatever. But there's other issues that you could sort of wrap your head around with this. So anyway, not telling you to use Heygen, just saying it's super cool, saying I'm going to be using it to try and help spread the gospel of ZT internationally because it can help me do things in other languages, and it looks really good. So yeah, so check that out and tell me what you think. Like, I think that this type of stuff, there's risks, there's problems, there's threats from it, but it also, if used correctly, could potentially be beneficial at a big scale. So anyway, I said I wouldn't do this in under 30 minutes, but I'm doing it under 30 minutes because folks got other stuff to do and everyone's sick of looking at my big misshapen head. I'll see y'all at RSA in May. If you're going to be there, please look me up. I'll put the link to the charity thing that I'm trying to do here. If you've got $2, if you've got $1, if you've got $5, click the link and donate. This stuff goes directly to a fund, 100% of it for veterans and people with PTSD that are taking alternative treatments, like not the stuff the government shoves down your throat, that will actually help people to get better. And for me, this one's personal. My own brother went through this. Like, my flesh and blood brother went through an issue with traumatic stress. He went through these treatments and it has benefited him and his family massively. So I know for a fact that this stuff is worth it. It's worth your time and effort. I'm doing what I can just to try and help this group out for whatever little bit of value I provide. So if you see the link and you've got time, $1, $2, $3, $5, $10, whatever you can give, it will go help someone, I promise you. So please, please, please help me do that. And the best part about it, I guess, is if we hit $5,000 before RSA, I'm going to go off and basically ruin my career and run around the Moscone in spandex because that's the bet that I'm going to lose. But whatever, I don't care. If it helps people, I don't mind wearing a thong and running around the Moscone. So, as always, stay smart, stay safe, stay secure. If I can help you, reach out to me. Please donate, and God bless. I'll catch you on the next one. Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.